tell you what.
Come on,
Earn a
living. More events than any man knows.
Exactly. By the way, New South Wales Blues, $1.45 to win the State of Origin series.
Is that all?
Mate, fair to him. Get that centre of excellence sorted, otherwise.
Yeah, mate, they're already preparing. Just talking to him right now as we speak.
There we go. Well, that fills me with confidence. Well done. And what fills me with even more confidence is the fact that you're in Brisbane and away from them. Rather than walking and saying, hey, Freddie, I've got this idea.
Freddie, mate, I don't like that play, mate.
Very good, Stewie. Enjoy Brisbane. A couple of days off here. What are you, touring around the River City?
We'll see what goes on, Jim. We'll have a couple of days to see what's happening. And, you know, I'll probably go and talk to the Australian cricket team, talk a little bit of tactics with them.
Outstanding, Steve.
I'm sure they'd love to have you into the inner sanctum. Yeah. Good on you, mate. We'll speak shortly.
Thanks,
Stewie.
See you, mate.
Stewie Clark there, giving his thoughts on the game of cricket. 1353 53, the open line number. We're going to go to the news right now. After the news, we have Grant Lee-Keyser, who's been given an OAM in the Australia Day Honours List. Leo Schlink to talk some tennis. Tanya with a sports update and football. We're going to ask Phil Moss, why did Alan Stajic get sacked?
I'm Sarah Wombe. Australian schools are being urged to take a stand against bullying and cyberbullying and join the National Day of Action. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison and Education Minister Dan Tehan say they have written to schools across the nation asking them to sign up to the 9th National Day of Action against bullying and violence on March 15. More than 4,700 schools have already registered. Former world champion skier Zali Steggall has announced she will contest Tony Abbott's seat of Warringah as an independent in the federal election. The former 1998 Winter Olympics bronze medal winner from Manly now works as a barrister. On Tuesday, Alice Thompson, a former advisor to Malcolm Turnbull, also announced that she would contest Warringah as an independent. Advocacy groups for the Murray-Darling Basin are gathering today on the steps of the South Australian Parliament to voice their concerns over the future of the river system. Advocator Robert McBride says the death of a million fish in New South Wales will affect water in South Australia. Mr McBride has told the ABC it's the biggest environmental issue affecting Australia.
The whole Murray-Darling could well be on the verge of collapse, and if it collapses, 40 million people on the planet don't get fed, and it's ramifications cataclysmic.
Also in news, a young man has died after he fell from a third-floor balcony last night in northwest Sydney. The body of a man believed to be missing war veteran Brock Hewitt has been found north of Perth yesterday. And a woman in Queensland has been wounded after two shots were fired at her neighbour's home in Townsville. Taliban officials say US negotiators have agreed to a draft peace deal setting out the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan within 18 months, potentially ending the United States' longest war. The BBC's Sikandar Kamani reports.
There have now been six consecutive days of talks between Taliban representatives and US officials in the Gulf. Progress is believed to have been made on at least two key areas: when American forces will be withdrawn from Afghanistan, and a commitment by the Taliban not to allow the country to become a base for international jihadist groups such as Al-Qaeda. The US Special Envoy for Reconciliation in Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad, is believed to be travelling from Qatar to Kabul to brief officials in the Afghan government about the proposals.
Meantime, US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has called on countries at the United Nations to pick a side on Venezuela, urging them to back Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido. Mr. Pompeo was addressing the 15-member UN Security Council, which met at his request after Washington and a string of countries in the region recognized Guaido as head of state and urged Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to step down. He's urging nations to withdraw financial support of the Maduro government.
We hope that every nation will join us in recognizing Interim President Juan Guaido. We hope, too, that each of those nations will ensure that they disconnect their financial systems from the Maduro regime and allow the assets that belong to the Venezuelan people to go to the rightful governors.
And Britain's Telegraph newspaper has apologised and paid damages to US First Lady Melania Trump after publishing an article it says contained many false statements. This is Air News. We have a new Australian Open women's champion and a new number one, as Air Sports' Paul Walsh reports.
In a match that ebbed and flowed for 2 hours and 27 minutes, it was Naomi Osaka who eventually held firm to claim her second successive Grand Slam title in 5 months over Petra Kvitova, 7-6, 5-7, 6-4. After taking the first set in a tiebreaker, Osaka looked set to close the match in two, but squandered three match points to allow Kvitova not only back into the second set, but to win it. The challenge was then back to Osaka.
I don't know, like I just felt like I didn't want to have any regrets. I think that if I didn't regroup after the second set, then I would have looked back on this match and probably cried or something.
From a 72 ranking this time last year to two Grand Slam titles and world number one, it's been a meteoric rise for Naomi Osaka. This is Paul Walsh at Melbourne Park for Air Sport.
Pat Cummins has become the first Australian bowler to grab a 10-wicket match haul this summer, ripping through Sri Lanka to inspire a crushing pink ball first test victory in Brisbane. He claimed a career best 6 for 23 after his first innings haul a 4 for 39 as Australia romped to victory by an innings and 40 runs in less than 3 days. In the A-League, there were wins for Melbourne Victory and Wellington Phoenix last night, and the Illawarra Hawks have celebrated an 82-81 NBL win over Cairns in Canberra. Australian Independent Radio News.
Don't whinge and whine about the traffic. Think of the wine you'll have at home. A glass of Windy Peak Cabernet Sauvignon. By De Bortoli, of course. Here's the traffic.
Just a reminder, school zones are back in operation on Tuesday between 8 and 9:30am and 2:30 and 4pm. So keep our kids safe. Stick to the 40 kilometre per hour school zone speed limit and slow down. In Mascot, we've got a bus broken down on Joyce Drive just past O'Riordan Street. One city-bound lane is closed. In Surrey Hills, special event clearways are in place on both sides of Chalmers Street between Cleveland and Devonshire Streets. And approaches to most of our beaches are moving well, including Bondi in the east and Cronulla to the south. Tonight on 10, a bold Hollywood A-lister is set to make a grand entrance. Find out who the new celeb is and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. 7:30 tonight on 10. I'm Solomon Gates, number one in racing on Sky Sports Radio.
Sky Sports Radio and the New South Wales Fire Service urge everyone to be aware of the summer risks. The extreme heat poses great fire danger to everyone. If you see a fire without a fire truck in attendance, call 000 straight away.
Punters, we bet you. You can't find a better betting app than the Tab app. With more live Sky Racing than any other app, exclusive race previews and the biggest range of race replays on offer, you have everything you need to give you the best betting experience all in the palm of your hand. Plus, enjoy access to detailed form, cutting-edge data and expert analysis from the best in the business. Download the Tab app today and stay ahead of the game. Tab. Terms and conditions apply. See tab.com.au. Gamble responsibly.
Sky Sports Radio, Sydney weather.
Sydney weather, Sydney, war and peace, hot, cloud increasing, 40% chance of rain, maximum of 32 degrees.
So I knew you were back.
The boys and girls, they just can't quite get it right, can they? Either too short or too long.
It's very comprehensive today.
That's what I mean. It's, one or the other guys. Fair dinkum. Now, Raymond, what about the temperature right now at Hebersham and at Hay? And where is Hebersham?
Western suburbs.
Is it?
Mount Druitt area.
Right. Okay.
Currently,
I thought you'd made that suburb up.
No. Currently 28 degrees at Hebersham. Going to get hot out there this afternoon. 37 degrees possible shower. Now, Hay, out in the Hay Plain.
Yes.
On the way to Adelaide. Currently only 22 degrees. Heading for a top of 28. Cloudy. Possible shower or two in Hay.
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy Smith and Roy Thomas.
Welcome back to the program. It's the final hour. We've got a big hour coming up too, Raymond. Grantley Kaiser is newly named an Order of Australia medalist. in the Australia's Day Honours List. What a
thoroughly deserved honour.
What a tribute. That's fantastic. Leo Schlink is also covering the tennis for us, so we'll look forward to speaking to him after a big victory for Naomi Osaka and the match tonight. Novak Djokovic up against Rafael Nadal, $1.75. Novak and Rafael, $2.10. Sports update with Tanya. We'll speak to Phil Moss. Can't wait to do that. And, of course, Trent Lanscale will probably be awake by now down there in Melbourne. And we'll look forward to having a chat to him from tab.com.au. We are talking about our great ties and our draws throughout the course of history. And for the best contribution, we're giving away a Wingman beer, a carton of Wingman beer, which I know you sampled over the summer break.
Can endorse a said product.
So too can I. And also so too can our former winner, Tom from Sylvania,
who
contacted me. You know,
I saw your tweet when you found, sorry, kicking about Tom, when you found the Wingman beer at the airport.
Oh, yeah, how good was that?
On tap, was it?
Yeah, it was on tap.
Wow.
On tap at Sydney Airport.
It's becoming a
domestic,
monolith.
Domestic terminal. Mm. What happened was Tom contacted me and said, just finishing the Wingman beer, it's been fantastic. What else did I win? I said, oh, fair dinkum, mate. Tom, you're a hard man to please. Fair dinkum. Anyway, I think he did win some other stuff, but please, where's the gratitude, Tom? We read your ridiculous text messages
things like
out.
That. He's
pedantic.
He's just pointing out the error of our ways at times.
Well, that'd keep him busy.
I know
that
it does,
would keep him busy. So a famous draw I remember was the 20-all draw between my beloved Parramatta Eels and Manly at the old Cumberland Oval, August 1981. That's Gerard at Oaklands. And, of course, later that year, went on to win their first ever New South Wales Rugby League Premiership.
The Blue Baggers against Newtown.
Yeah, 20 points to 11. It was a great day for all those Eels supporters. Seems so long ago. 13:53.
Don't bring it up to 10.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the open line number. But let's start with a chat with a fellow who's a legend in his own right, an outstanding contributor across media landscape for the last 40 years in this country.
Former boss of mine.
Oh, there you go.
He was a sports editor of Sunday Telly for a while and...
He's been awarded the Order of Australia Medal. It's a fantastic honour on yesterday's Australia Day Honours List. To go through his career and the highs and lows, we thought we'd have a chat with Grantley Kaiser, who joins us on the line. G'day, Grantley.
Good morning, lads. Thanks very much for having me on the program. Really appreciate it.
No, we're looking forward to having a chat. We ask the same of our sporting people when they're... They're players, but what about yourself? How did you have a playing career? How did journalism and writing about sport become part of your life, Grantley?
Yeah, well, I was actually training in boxing at a gym in Brisbane for a while, and I was contributing to boxing magazines actually even before I started on the newspaper. The first paper I saw, Brisbane Telegraph, back in 1980, and I used to get along to Festival Hall and I was sort of under the mentorship of the great old promoter up here, Reg Layton, who was a legendary hard man in Queensland. He trained a lot of famous boxers, including guys like Hector Thompson and Steve Axel. And so I was a regular at Festival Hall there from about the time when I was 17, covering the big fights there. And after a couple of years up in Brisbane, I went down to Sydney and I started training and boxing at the Newtown Police Youth Club, which was a little police boys club beside the train tracks at Erskineville. It was run by a guy called a young sign writer called Johnny Lewis, who had a lot of hair in those days and a beard from memory. And Johnny had a team of young amateur boxers. One of them was a kid called Jeff Fennett. I started writing about Jeff, just his amateur career, and Johnny and I got on really well, and Johnny sort of made me his right-hand man at the gym, helping with the boys, and I became his corner man. And through that association, my coverage of boxing sort of was enhanced a great deal because I was getting on to all these big fights and getting the bird's eye view and from very much the inside story. And so it sort of mushroomed from there. But I guess from the earliest days, Muhammad Ali was an enormous influence on me as a child. I remember his comeback victories and his great win over George Foreman at the Rumble in the Jungle. I was only about 12 years old at the time, and to me that was almost like a fairy tale. It was a modern fable, and I was so intrigued by that I sort of got hooked on the sport. And as far as the history of the sport was concerned, my grandmother gave me a great book. It was a big Reader's Digest copy book when I was a very, very small boy, and it was called Australia's Yesterdays, and it was just full of all these great photos of Australian history right from the earliest days to the present time. And one of the photos that really intrigued me was a photograph from Sydney Stadium on Boxing Day 1908. It was the big giant American Jack Johnson for the first World Heavyweight Championship, the first time a black man had been allowed to fight for the World Heavyweight Championship, and it was in Sydney, and just the colourful stories of that fight and the extreme racism that was hurled at Jack Johnson, and it just harked back to very much a bygone time, and I was intrigued by the whole history around it, and I guess that's what got hooked me on the history of boxing, and I've been covering it ever since.
Yeah, I can understand, Grantley, and knowing you for many years, your love of the sport. Can you take us back to those halcyon days of Fenwick, of Harding, and
yeah.
We mentioned earlier particularly the famous draw between Fenwick and Nelson in America. I know you were there. Everyone back home thought Fenwick had won. I know Fenwick was devastated. Did a piece of Jeff Fenwick, in terms of his invincibility, sort of die or evaporate that day?
Oh, I think it did. I think it was so heartbreaking for him. He'd worked so hard in that fight, and he'd come back so strong. Azuma was probably very slick early on, but Jeff finished all over the top of him. And I think really a piece of him did evaporate that night in the Vegas heat.
Never the same fighter afterwards, was he, Grantley?
He was never really quite the same fighter. And he managed to win a few more fights after that, but of course Azuma beat him when they had a return fight in probably one of the most anticipated fights ever in Australia down in Melbourne. He just wasn't the same fighter going into that bout, and he was never the same again. But in his heyday, he was like a meteorite, you know, shining for very, very briefly on the boxing landscape. He probably peaked for about 2 or 3 years, and in those 2 or 3 years, he really was, to me, he was invincible. And he'd won all his fights, and he'd become the first guy to win 3 world championships while undefeated. The guys he just steamrolled, you know, he steamrolled great fighters like Carlos Zarate and all these top guys, Marcos Villasana, Mario Martinez, all who were really, really top fighters on the world stage. Jeff didn't just beat them in close decisions. He annihilated them. You know, most of the guys that he fought, Daniel Zaragoza was another one. We went over to Perth. Daniel Zaragoza, you know, is a great, great champion from Mexico. And Jeff just hammered him, just battered him every round. And he really was a dominant figure on world boxing.
Mm.
2 or 3 years. Mm. You know, guys like Mike Tyson would say that Jeff Fenwick was his favourite fighter. You know, that gives you an idea of just how great he was. But I was very lucky through the association with Jeff and Johnny. That really sort of, it helped my boxing career enormously. It was the cornerstone of it. I'd say Jeff, Johnny, and a guy called Ray Wheatley, who was vice president of the IBF for a long time from Sydney's Western Suburbs. I'd say those three guys taught me everything that I know about boxing. Mm-hmm. And it's through them that I was able to get an entree to all these big fights around the world through involved with Costa Zoo, and then Joe Buckner's corner when he fought Frank Bruno.
Wow.
In London, you know, 40,000 people there, and all the Hollywood celebrities at ringside. There was just an enormous night. Joe, what did he ever meet? You know, he's very much an unsung. He lived anonymously in Brisbane for about the last 10 or 15 years, but he gave Muhammad Ali two very absolute toe-to-toe war with Joe Frazier 45 years ago. You know, he's a great, great champion, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And another guy that I was very closely involved with through Jeff and Johnny was Lovemore Ndu,
who
is now a very, very well-known solicitor in Sydney. He's got all sorts of degrees in law, which he, you know, did off his own part-time while he was boxing. But I went with him for the great Canelo Alvarez in Veracruz, Mexico, 1,000 people in a dilapidated old baseball stadium there. Canelo is regarded these days as the best boxer in the world, pound for pound. He's just beaten Golovkin, who at the time was 39, and Canelo was 20. Lovemore gave him all the rounds, was with him all. Canelo, even though he's ripped all these great fighters, Lovemore was with him all the way. That has to be one of the great nights of boxing that I've been involved in. Through Jeff and Johnny, I've had some remarkable experiences in boxing. Wonderful.
You might have answered it already. Best boxer you've seen, either in their corner or not?
Oh, well, I'd have to say Jeff Fenwick.
Yeah.
The things he did, and Johnny would agree with that, he trained Costa as well, and they were both great, great champions. But the difference was with Jeff was fighting at the Olympics after only about 20 amateur fights, and half of those were against kids from police boys' clubs. So that gives you an idea of just how good he was. Mm. Something like amateur fights in the Soviet system before he went to the Olympics. But Jeff was competing with the best boxer boxers in the world after, you know, he was strong and aggressive and such a great champion. And then when he turned professional, champion after only a handful of professional fights, he was fighting guys like Zaragoza and Zarate after only about 10 or 5. Someone like Zarate had, at the peak of his career, 60 professional fights for 58 knockouts. You know, that was the kind of guys fighting, and he was just
monstrous.
So
yeah,
he was the best fighter that I've been involved with. But another guy that I must was Jeff Horn. You know, I've been involved in some big fights, but none topped Jeff Horn against Pacquiao at Suncorp Stadium. I know you guys have covered with big events, big football games and great State of Origin things, but the atmosphere that day at Suncorp Stadium, with people all on the ground around the ring in chairs around the ground, I've never seen Suncorp Stadium look like it. Absolutely packed, more than 50,000 people. And Jeff Horn, this nice, humble, quiet, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth kind of guy, nicest kid you could meet, has taken on one of the greatest boxers of all time and won the world championship from him in front of 50,000 people. It was such a dream day that even days later I was thinking to myself, did that really happen? Was that something I imagined? It was just so surreal. It was just an incredible day.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. Hey, Granny, did you ever get to meet your boyhood idol, Muhammad Ali?
Yeah, I did, but unfortunately by the time I met Muhammad Ali, I met Ali when Jeff Fenwick was training Mike Tyson for Mike's last fight, and Ali's daughter, Layla Ali, was fighting on the undercard.
Yes.
And Ali came there. He was actually with his wife and also one of his ex-wives, who was Layla's mother. And so Muhammad was in the dressing room. But by that stage, Muhammad was he was really well gone. The Parkinson's really had taken a bad effect on him. His the colour of his skin was like grey and very a wan looking colour. And his hair was thinning out, and he had this really vacant look in his eyes. So I really could converse with him. He was well past it. But just to be in his presence, he had this incredible aura around him. You couldn't just help but think back to the days when he was the most charismatic and the most beautiful athlete probably of all time.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Grantley, I know what it's like to be his underling. What's it like to be the boss of Ray Thomas?
Very difficult. I try to be pretty much. Kind of raised, and he's a wonderful, wonderful guy and an absolute credit to the sport that he covers and sport in general. He's just a great guy on the Sydney media landscape. Yeah, wonderful man.
Now, well, Grantley, when I heard yesterday you got this award, I thought no more thoroughly deserved. Congratulations, mate. It's a tremendous honour for you, but you've covered that boxing with real passion, and anyone who reads your words would understand that. Congratulations, mate. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Absolutely.
And enjoy your Australia Day long weekend with, is it an OAM?
OAM,
yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Congratulations, Grantley.
Good on you, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.
Grantley Kaiser there, a legendary Australian boxing writer, and great to have him on the program. So that was Ray's former boss there and great mate. Next up, we'll have Ray's colleague and great mate, Leo Schlink. And then after that, we'll have Ray's wife, Tanya, doing a sports update.
The catalogue for the 2019 Melbourne Premier yearling sale is out now. 786 yearlings on offer from March 3 to 6 at a renovated Oaklands Junction. A new-look venue, the same English passion. Catalogue available at inglis.com.au.
Race the best with the best. Dynamic Syndications invites you to join the people's trainer, Richard Freeman, in our grey yearling colt by champion US sire, Tappet. Sire has 229 stakes horses, including 25 Group 1 winners. From forestry mare, Smokey's Love, our colt spread on across, delivering 87.5% winners and 25% stakes winners. Become part of our dynamic Richard Freeman team. Visit dynamicsyndications.com or call 1-800-619-999. AFSL 3368-08.
Continues to deliver on the biggest stage, an Australian Open champion for a fifth straight year.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
And welcome back to the show with Jimmy and Ray. Jimmy, I've got a text.
Any other friends you want to get on? Hang on.
No, he doesn't want his name mentioned.
Right.
But we'll call him John. Okay, that's your first name anyway. He said, morning, Ray. Talking about the famous ties this morning, I was lucky enough to see every ball of the 1960 tied test at the Gabba.
Wow.
He was 11 years old at the time, and his father would take him out of school and go and watch the test. Ironically, according to John, this should never have been a tie. The late, great Ken Slasher Mackay swept the ball toward the square leg boundary on the last day. No ropes back then, of course. And it was going to be four for sure, but a kid near us in the outer hopped the fence, grabbed the ball before it reached the boundary, and threw it to a West Indian fieldsman. As a result, they got three, not four runs. How about that?
Wow.
My dad in his younger days wrote to the Courier Mail about this little-known fact, and it is true. And he goes on and talks about the test match. So how about that? I've never heard
that. Interesting. No, I'd never heard that either.
So they all talk about
Mark Taylor, you know, who retired on, declared on 334 not out.
Yeah.
And, oh, you know, he wanted to preserve Don Bradman's. Mate, he smashed it to mid-wicket about a ball before stumps, trying to get an extra run. And then he had time to think about, oh, yeah, I did it for the Don.
Better not do this, yeah.
Morning, Tub. I know he listens to the program. We've had someone ask us what prize money Dylan Alcott won. Boys, any idea what prize money Dylan Alcott made for his win yesterday? Bruce from Boambi East. By the way, Bruce, I went past Boambi East.
That's on the way, was it?
It's on the way up there, yeah.
Whereabouts
near Port Macquarie.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, Vicky from Port Macquarie, Vicky comes up with an idea. She says that for every time we hear a bad story in the newspapers about a football player, we can actually do a talk topic where you hear a good story about it. You know what I'm like with that, Vicky? I'd be all for it. But, by the way, Vicky, you live in a beautiful part of the world. We stayed at Flynn's Beach at Port Macquarie.
Is that in the main beach there? Or
no, it's just south of the main beach.
Okay.
South of the main
Great
beach.
Great spot, Port Macquarie, isn't it?
Absolutely. 1353-53, the open line number. Actually, we've got Leo Schlink on the line now, and I think he might be able to give us an indication of exactly how much prize money Dylan Alcott won in his victory yesterday. His fifth straight Australian Open and his seventh Grand Slam title. Morning, Leo.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Can you give us an understanding and the listeners?
I'll have to take that question on notice and get back to you straight away. I've got the prize money schedule, but I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, okay. No problem.
Leo, did you happen to catch Dylan Alcott's speech after he won the Australian Open yesterday? Gee, it was fantastic, wasn't it?
He's remarkable. Incredible athlete, and you know, he was an Olympic basketballer as well.
Yeah.
Very successful. And the record he's building in his particular category, he was unlucky not to win the Newcomb medal this past year, given what he achieved. So it's a very, I mean, I know it's all subjective, but in one of the elements of winning the Newcomb medal is presentability and diplomacy and how they present the sport in a good light. Well, he's
hard to beat him.
What Australian surf wants.
Yeah, yeah, hard to beat him.
Yeah.
Hey, Leo, before we talk about the men's final tonight, which should be an epic, last night's women's final between Naomi Osaka and Petra Kvitova, couldn't take your eyes off the TV, Leo.
It was gripping stuff, Ray. Mm. Fantastic final, and one that women's tennis really needed. There have been some great ones, but when you contrast it to what happened in New York with Serena Williams and the Carlos Ramos confrontation and the post-match and the way that Naomi Osaka was left to digest her first Grand Slam win, contrast that to last night. And Petra Kvitova, she made that final. Naomi Osaka won it. She was fantastic. They were both fantastic. And it was just, as you say, enthralling, Ray. It was one of the best women's finals I've ever seen. Mm.
Three championship points and couldn't get it done, Naomi Osaka. And then she went into an abyss for 10 or 12 minutes. So the incredible thing about is the mind to say, right, well, she's gone, but she has the presence as a young player to steady herself, recognise where she was, and then make the changes on the run, which I thought was the most impressive thing about her win. What did you think, Leo?
Yeah, absolutely. It was an incredible adjustment midstream when things had got away from her.
Yes.
You know, she saw those three match points. Yes, they were on Petra Kvitova's serve. But then, you know, she dropped serve and did so in such a lame fashion at the end. And for her then to regroup, as she did, says a lot about the people she's been working with. And Sasha Bajin, who used to work with Victoria Azarenka and also Serena, he's been absolutely pivotal in that. He was acclaimed as the WTA Coach of the Year last year. A lot of people were thinking, well, you know, what's wrong with a bloke called Darren Cahill? He's got Simona Halep, the world number one. He's won the French Open. But Bajin has taken Naomi Osaka from 72 in the world to number one, and part of that is her newfound mental steel. Mm. And at her age, that's remarkable. I mean, she keeps that kind of attitude going. She's got two majors already. Hard court, she's going to be awfully difficult to beat on any of those surfaces.
And as good as she is now, Leo, there's so much scope for improvement. She didn't win a point at the net last night, and the second serve, to be fair, needs a fair bit of work on. Yet she's already number one in the world. 12 months ago, she was number 72. So it's been a remarkable transformation from a young lady who's got so much ahead of her.
Yeah, she's got like a strength of first serve and that lashing forehand. She hits it so flat and so hard, incredibly powerful. When you see players take time away from someone like Petra Kvitova, you know that they time the ball as well as anybody, and she's got those big weapons, and she's not afraid to own the baseline, and that was part of her success last night. She was really crowding Petra Kvitova on the second serve. She does so many things so well, and there are other things, as you point out, Ray, that she can work on, and she's not the complete package yet, which is really scary when you look at how young she still is.
Promoter's dream tonight, almost. Maybe if Roger was there, then it would add a different dimension. But when you look at Channel 9 broadcasting the tennis for the first time, there is no test cricket going head-to-head with it, and you've got Novak Djokovic up against Rafael Nadal. It is almost perfect from that point of view. The numbers that you wrote about today are incredible, Leo, and that is, you know, the head-to-heads, the 2012 final, the head-to-heads in majors, the head-to-head on hard court. To put you on the spot, who do you see winning?
I picked Novak at the start. Rafa's progress, given how abbreviated his preparation has been, startling. Like, when you bear in mind that after US Open last year, he had surgery, and then missed Brisbane, played Sydney in the Fast Four against Nick Kyrgios. That was it. And a couple of practice sets at Melbourne Park. And he said that these days he's got the same stage as Roger Federer, where less is more. Fewer hours on the practice court, and he's very sensitive to anything that goes wrong with his body. He's had a lot of injuries over time. But the way he's gone through this tournament, he beat three Australians in a row and capped with Alex de Minaur in the third round. He's got better and better. He destroyed Tsitsipas, and that kind of form. He's going to be a massive threat. The one stat of all the ones that we've mentioned is he's on a seven-match losing streak on hard courts to Novak. And this is Novak's best surface. Rafa is obviously the king of play. This is going to be an incredible match.
In saying that, Leo, both their semi-finals, you mentioned the Tsitsipas semi-final that Rafa won in straight sets 2-4 in love, and he was absolutely awesome in that. But Novak, he's had one less day. Rafa's had 2 days to prepare, but Novak's semi-final, love 2-2, he couldn't have played any better either.
No, he had that little bit of a scare. Shapovalov took a set off him. He's had a few along the way, but apart from that, he's been completely in control. He's back in the same form now that won in Wimbledon, the US Open, and Masters Series in North America last year. He got to the final in Doha. He lost to Batista Agu, who went and improved the form at Melbourne Park. He wins tonight. He's the first player in history to win seven Australian Opens on the men's side. That would take him up to major number 15. Does Roger Federer's record become a little bit attainable for him, given that he's 6 years younger? It puts him in the ballpark. And, of course, if Rafa wins, he goes to number 18, only two behind Roger with the French Open, only a couple of months away.
The other thing about these two players, and throw Roger in there, and you'll be able to tell us, Leo, or give your opinion on it, certainly, whether it's the post-match interview, whether it's the way they conduct themselves, they are great ambassadors for this sport. And I reckon they almost challenge each other that way as well. As much as they challenge themselves on the court, do you get a sense
that... the nicest guy.
Yeah, like who's going to be the most popular tennis player in the world? Well, that's a really tough battle as well.
They get it. Like at the French Open, they do post-match interviews, which are good. Nothing like this, of course, at Wimbledon. And if they do it at the US, but at the Australian, it seems the most relaxed, and they seem to revel in it. And Rafa made the point yesterday that he would have improved as a player because of what's inside him, that inner fire. But he's improved mostly because of Andy, Roger, and Novak. And all four of them, and Stan, I throw into that mix because he's been a great player as well.
Yeah.
They get a real buzz out of their responsibility to promote the sport. They have a really good understanding of that, okay, we are champions, we're making a lot of money out of this game, but we're also ambassadors. And their understanding of that and appreciation of their responsibility is something that separates him from a lot of other players.
Yeah.
Lee, obviously Andy Murray's talking retirement post-Wimbledon, so the big four become the big three. A lot of talk at this tournament about Generation Next finally closing the gap. Are they?
I'm not sure, Ray. We saw Chung come through last year and make the semi-finals, and he was going to do it. Look, the Next Gen final in Milan has only been going now for 2 years. Chung won it 2 years ago and made the Australian semis last year. Tsitsipas has emulated that this year. Look, it's inevitable. It's going to happen soon, or soon-ish. But are they really up to the standard to beat Novak and Rafa in this form and Roger on grass? No, they're not yet. They're going to have big runs. But then the magic about the big fours we've had for so long is that these guys have been so consistent. And you look at the numbers and what they've accumulated over the time, and you go right back to 2005 Australian Open with Marat Safin. Well, since then, look at the domination. No other players won Wimbledon outside of the big four since Roger Federer in 2003 when he started that run. The Australian Open is almost the same. Stan got in there, and if you want to call it the big five, well, they've kept it since Safin. US Open, Rafa's just made the French Open his own. These players are remarkable simply because they back it up all the time.
Dylan Alcott prize money?
I still have to...
Oh, you put him on the spot.
I will come back to you, I promise, before the morning's out.
That'd be fantastic. Sorry to put you on the spot, Leah. Yeah. Looking forward to this game tonight after a great women's final last night as well. Thanks for your coverage on this program too over the last couple of weeks. I know we've appreciated it. I'm sure the listeners have as well.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks, Leo.
Leo Schlink there, covering the Australian Open for us, as well as News Limited. $1.75, Novak Djokovic. Rafael Nadal, $2.10. Novak.
Okay.
Novak.
Maybe Rafa, just what a game's going to be.
You and me head-to-head.
Yeah.
There we go, 13:53:53. A break and back with Phil Moss and a sports update with Tanya.
Sky Sports Radio covers all the major greyhound racing around New South Wales and Australia.
Good morning, everyone. Plenty of feature racing coming up.
Going Greyhounds with host John Bunny Brash brings you all the latest news, interviews and tips galore. Catch it every Monday morning from 10:30 here on Sky Sports Radio.
Punters, we bet you. You can't find a better betting app than the Tab app. With more live Sky racing than any other app, exclusive race previews and the biggest range of race replays on offer, you have everything you need to give you the best betting experience all in the palm of your hand. Plus, enjoy access to detailed form, cutting-edge data and expert analysis from the best in the business. Download the Tab app today and stay ahead of the game. Tab. Terms and conditions apply. See tab.com.au. Gamble responsibly.
Jesse Lingard, 2-0. Oh, it's classic counter-attack. Lukaku involved in both goals. And Jesse Lingard, the scourge of Arsenal.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. I know you spoke about it last week, Ray, when Phil Moss, by the way, you thought apparently you had really good rapport with during the course of the 3 hours, so that's what you keep telling me. I don't know why you keep telling me that. But anyway, Alan Stajic has been sacked, and no matter what you read or where you read it or whatever, you're still trying to understand.
There's more to this story,
I'm going to put him on the spot again. Morning, Phil Moss.
Good morning, guys. I think the word that was used last week was chemistry.
Chemistry. Sorry, my mistake. And that probably underscores that Ray and I don't have it. But anyway.
No, 9 years. No blue in 9 years, so Phil. So.
Yeah, no, it was good fun. It was nice to keep the seat warm for you, Jimmy. But, look, it's been a... I don't quite know what word to use to describe this week, but it's been... I guess the two words that come to mind is very messy. With my cap on at Football Coaches Australia, I've been pretty close to it, and it's look, I don't know. All I know is there's a lot more to come before this goes away. The reasons for Alan's dismissal have not been made clear, and as a coaches association, we're there to support Alan, but we're there to support all coaches of both genders, right the way from the national teams down to the state leagues. And all we ask for is clarity and transparency around situations like this. Why is the most successful Matildas coach in the history of women's football in this country, not taking them to a World Cup that he's been preparing them for 4 years.
Yeah.
And at the moment, those reasons are just not clear. It's too simplistic to hide behind toxic culture without going into some specifics. Now, technically, FFA don't have to go into those reasons, but morally, we believe they've got absolutely a reason to do that for Alan, number one, but also for those thousands and thousands of Matildas fans out there who were looking for the Matildas going to this World Cup as contenders under the coach that's prepared them so well.
Yep. You probably answered my next question then, Phil, because I was going to ask you, what happens next in this whole saga?
Well, I mean, from the Matildas' point of view, FFA have made it very clear that they've begun the process of appointing his successor, and again, that's another situation that's from a football punter and fans' perspective. I just don't understand why we've had to go to cricket. Nothing against Matthew Mott, the Australian women's cricket coach, but why we've had to put someone like that on our panel to select our next Matildas coach is beyond me and a lot of people in the industry. But that's the next step, is to find a successor, because at the end of the day, we've got a Matildas football team here that have got a Cup of Nations coming up in late February and a World Cup coming up in June. So first and foremost, they need to be looked after as a football team and someone that a team that so many Australians are so proud of. But from Alan's point of view, we need to get some answers and some clarity for him, so you know he can move forward. But the innuendo and the ambiguity around his dismissal is not doing anyone any favours, least of all Alan Stadgett.
You're nominating yourself for the role?
No, I'm not, mate. I'm very happy doing what I'm doing, Jimmy, and pestering you guys on a Sunday morning.
Oh, you do that well. Socceroos. 1-0, and the nil is the thing. Three times in five games. Mm. Goal scoring, I know we talk about the pass back and Milos Daganek and how disappointing that was, but that was the big thing for me coming out of that tournament, Phil.
Lack of goals.
Yeah,
look, you know I'm a glass half full type of guy, Jimmy, and
yep.
I, and if I look at the way, the style of football we played and what Graham Arnold's tried to do, and everyone knows I've got a close association with Arnie and I've worked under him, so I know how he operates. What he's tried to do leading into this tournament and during this tournament, and if I look at who's to come back in the likes of Martin Boyle, Aaron Moy, Zani, a fit again Leckie, a fit again Andrew Naboo, I'm very excited because I think the style of football will definitely lead to creating more chances, getting more bodies in the box and hence scoring more goals. Mm. What we lacked at this tournament was individual quality to unlock packed defences. And if you look at Barcelona, take Barcelona for example, if every team they play against every week packs their defence and gets numbers behind the ball, the difference is a little bloke called Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
So often, and that's because he's got the individual quality to get past his defenders, attract two or three defenders, which opens space for other players, and he's got that individual brilliance to create goals for others and score goals himself. So I really do think, and I know you know a lot of people have their opinions on this, one way or the other, but when you take quality, we're an average side. With the soccer, make no mistake, we're an average squad from Socceroos standards. With an average squad, you take Boyle, Moy, Azani, Leckie, Naboot out of that squad.
Come back to the field.
That's right, exactly. And Asian football is going ahead in leaps and bounds, and they're spending a lot of money, a lot of investment. We don't have a training centre for the national team.
Mm.
We don't have a home base for our national team. We haven't had one for 30, or as long as I can remember, 40 years. So we really need to reassess where we're heading and, you know, the destination we want to get to and how we're going to get there. And I've heard it before, we want to, you know, not just compete in a World Cup, we want to win a World Cup. Well, guess what? We're not going to do that without serious investment in development of our young players and our national teams.
Okay. Well, being a half-full glass guy as you are, Phil, players who probably caught your eye at the tournament from the Socceroos side of the fence, and who goes on and wins this thing?
Yeah, well, look, I think, you know, you're talking players from the Socceroos at Kilmarnock,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think, look, the obvious ones, Ryan Grant, I thought was outstanding, and got his chance when Josh Houston went down with a stomach complaint or a groin complaint, I think, in the first game. Chris Economides, who was lighting up the A-League before he got selected late into the squad, I thought was outstanding. Young Awa Mabil, who, of course, his tournament ended in absolute tragedy. And, My thoughts and condolences go out to Awa and his family with the passing of his sister in a car crash. I think they were the ones. And I thought Apo Gianu, when he got his chance up front off the bench and in that last game as a two-pronged strike force with Jamie McLaren, I thought he did quite well as well. So there's certainly a lot to like. Deganek, of course, who made the big mistake in the last game, but I thought his tournament was very strong. And Matty Ryan, of course, we know that he's edging closer and closer to being a world-class goalkeeper.
To win it, who's going to win the Asian Cup 2019?
I think Iran. I tipped them before the tournament. I've seen nothing to suggest that they can't go all the way. I think they play Japan in the semi-final. Qatar take on UAE. In the other one, I think Qatar will knock UAE out. They haven't been convincing. I think they've flattered to deceive at their home tournament. I think maybe hometown crowds have helped get them this far. But I think Qatar and Iran will play the final. Japan, again, I think have flattered to deceive as well for such a big Asian nation. But, Iran beat Qatar in the final, and Iran will get the money under Carlos Quiroz, who you'll remember was a coach at Manchester United for all those years under Sir Alex Ferguson.
Hey, just on the big blue from last night, if we come back closer to home with the A-League, was there anyone more pumped up from a Melbourne victory point of view than Kevin Muscat?
He laughed at me, didn't he? Yeah.
Sheesh.
He just leads the big blue, doesn't he? He just loves it, and especially when he gets over the top of Sydney FC. Look, I thought it was a fantastic game of football, first and foremost, and real quality goals. Ola Toivonen's free kick is world class. You see that quality at the World Cup, which is no surprise. But I thought Melbourne Victory deserved to win, but I thought Sydney FC, if you look at the crossbar from Lafondra, and they hit the post as well. They were good value for at least a point. But you wouldn't take the three away from Melbourne Victory on the night. But Stevie Corica and Sydney will come home happy with the performance, if not the result.
And Phil, gee, it must be tough being a Wanderers supporter this season. They had 3 points in the bag against the Roar.
Oh, right. 2-0 up in the 92nd minute, and then they're 2-2 after 96 minutes. Just incredible. And the mistake from Vedran Nedovic
that
Brisbane that last corner is just another brain snap from him this season. He's had a few coming outside of his area, and they're just unexplainable, unfortunately. But when goalkeepers make them, they stand out like the proverbial.
Yeah.
But, certainly Marcus Babbel must be, well, I was going to say pulling his hair out, but he's got none of that, so scratching his head.
The trial period continues. You're in next week for Ray Thomas, so we'll try and get some sort of, I think the word used was chemistry, going during the course of that 3 hours.
That's our challenge, mate. We've got it on Bill and Boz when we appear on there together, so I'm sure we can transfer it to the studio at the SBW.
Bringing the A-team back together next week.
All in the eyes of the beholder, isn't it, really?
How are Ray's eyes? Does he need toothpicks after games?
No,
I'm
actually
back
okay.
In the week?
Yeah.
It's funny, when you travel up the front of the plane, things are a little different, Phil.
1A, was it?
Oh, yes. Don't you know who I am?
Can't say that.
Oh, that sort of stuff.
Oh, dear.
Love it. Have a great day, guys. Make sure you stay cool.
Good on you,
mate. See you there, Phil. Isn't it funny when the guests start saying goodbye to us?
Exactly. They've had enough of us.
See, exactly. We're just sitting here having a chat. Now, time for this.
Yeah. On the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend, with a sports update, here's Tanya Thomas.
Pat Cummins became the first Australian bowler to grab a 10-wicket match haul this summer, inspiring Australia to an innings and 40 runs win over Sri Lanka in the first cricket test in Brisbane. He claimed a career best 6 for 23 after his first innings haul of 4 for 39, the Aussies winning in less than 3 days. But despite the victory, a realistic captain, Tim Payne, said his side is very much a work in progress. The second test starts Friday in Canberra. Naomi Osaka will wake up tomorrow morning as women's tennis world number one after overcoming a second set meltdown when she lost three championship points to eventually beat Petra Kvitova in three sets and win the Australian Open 7-6, 5-7, 6-4. At 21, she'll be the youngest world number one in 9 years. Also last night, the Aussie pair of Astra Sharma and John Patrick Smith were defeated in the mixed doubles final. Earlier in the day, Dylan Alcott won his fifth straight men's quad wheelchair title. Tonight's men's final sees Novak Djokovic versus Rafael Nadal, but before that, Aussie John Peers will be on Rod Laver Arena just after 3 this afternoon in the men's doubles final when he partners Henri Continent and they take on the French pair of Pierre-Hugues Hubert and Nicolas Mahut. Sydney FC has dropped to 3rd on the A-League ladder after going down to Melbourne Victory in the Big Blue last night at Amy Park 2-1, while Wellington recorded a home win over Melbourne City 1-0, David Williams the scorer in the 5th minute. Illawarra coach Bob Beveridge says sweltering conditions in Canberra forced him to rethink his game strategy in the Hawks' 82-81 NBL win over Cairns yesterday. The Hawks opted to play their Australia Day home game at the AIS Arena on an afternoon when the temperature peaked at 41 degrees in the nation's capital. Today, the Kings play Perth at Qdos Bank Arena at 2:50. Blake Shin made a stunning comeback to race riding at Royal Randwick yesterday. The jockey had been sidelined since August last year after suffering a broken vertebra in his neck after a fall in a barrier trial. He won on his first Mount Dawn Passage and then took out the Carrington Stakes on, get ready for it folks, on Tom Melbourne. Yes, Tom has finally cracked it for a win, and as Darren Fundell said in his call, the drought is broken. Murray Wallace scored a 94th-minute winner to give Millwall an FA Cup fourth-round win over Everton this morning 3-2. Other teams through to the final 16, Man City, Watford, Swansea and Wimbledon. And Adam Scott is in contention during the third round. Actually, it's late in the third round now of the PGA Tour event at Torrey Pines in San Diego. The Aussie is outright second at 15-under. He's 4 below the leader, Justin Rose. Jason Day is at 9-under. He's 10 off the lead. And Tiger Woods, in his first tournament of the year, is way down the leaderboard at 5-under. And just quickly, boys, statisticians reached for the record books to put into historic perspective the West Indies win over England in the first cricket test in Barbados. Overnight, they won by 381 runs, which is their biggest test win in 39 years.
Wow.
Yeah, jeez. Their third biggest ever.
39 years, so we're talking Lloyd, Richards, Garner.
The golden era.
Holding.
The golden era.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're partying in Barbados, mum, I can just imagine.
When you get rolled for 77 your first dig, you're in all sorts, aren't you?
The thing about Bridgetown Barbados, in my mind, is they're partying anyway. They just so happen to win the test match.
Yeah, they had a reason for it.
They don't need a reason at all.
Nah. Thank you, Tan. I do appreciate that. Now, Bruce has sent this in via Twitter, if you want to send a tweet to us, at BigSportsWEND. He said a little bit earlier, Paul from Huskisson, whose health hasn't been great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, health hasn't been great.
Feeling
so
better, Paul.
A big cheerio to you from everyone at the show here, Paul. But this comes in from Bruce. Bruce, this is an indication of Ray's tipping strike rate. The Smith family's drive to the Gold Coast. They were lucky not to have hitchhiked.
Why did you drive, by the way?
Well, we had a number of destinations. We had my sister's macadamia farm at Rosebank, which is just inland from Byron Bay, and then we went to Broadbeach.
Scott Seaman's got a macadamia farm up
there. Yeah, you're saying that. I didn't know that. I should have.
Melbourne Company.
I called in a scene.
Yeah.
We locked the doors and the gates.
So you wanted to go different places. Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, so we're doing the trip. Yeah. Mm. And look, there's nothing like spending 9 or 10 hours in the car with
you. Are you going to do it again soon?
Fantastic. Not for this decade. 1353 53, the open line number. We'll come back with your calls and our Melbourne listener.
The catalogue for the 2019 Melbourne Premier Yearling Sale is out now. 786 yearlings on offer from March 3 to 6 at a renovated Oaklands Junction. A new look venue, the same English passion. Catalogue available at English.com.au.
Race the best with the best. Dynamic Syndications invites you to join the people's trainer, Richard Freeman, in our grey yearling cult by champion US sire, Tappet. Sire has 229 stakes horses, including 25 Group 1 winners. From forestry mare Smokey's Love, our cult spread on across delivering 87.5% winners and 25% stakes winners. Become part of our dynamic Richard Freeman team. Visit dynamicsyndications.com or call 1-800-619-999. AFSL 3368-08.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
Just a shout out to Margaret, who rang in a little bit earlier to get Ray's tips. You a masochist or what, Margaret?
It's a common theme this show,
isn't it?
Lovely. Good morning, Margaret. How are you?
By the way, time now to speak to one of our one of two Victorian listeners
Paramount's
today.
Because well.
Paramat is down there in Victoria. Trent Lanscale from tab.com.au. Hello, Trent.
Doubling the audience. Good morning to you, fellas.
How are you, Trent?
How'd you go today? Well, we doubled our audience in Victoria. Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Now, Aussie Open, you been getting out to any of the matches?
No, I haven't, Jimmy. I've been in the office the whole time and lucky to do some crosses on Sky Racing 1 as well during the evening, and we'll do one again tonight because I know Ray has a heavy heart, but it is a fantastic final that we anticipate coming up between Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. Novak Djokovic, $1.75, and Rafael Nadal, $2.10. Just in the head-to-head, fellas, just slightly ahead Djokovic against Nadal. It's 27-25. But just in the last 15 encounters, Djokovic leads 12-3. And just a few of the big bets that we've had on during the tournament. One punter with Novak Djokovic. They'll be sweating tonight. They had 49,500 at $2.10. That was placed on January 17. And yesterday there was one bet of 50,000 at $1.75 on Djokovic to win tonight. And a couple of wagers on Nadal of 15,000 and 11,000. They were placed on Friday night. But it promises to be a beauty. Mm. Maybe not as long as what occurred in 2012 when it went for almost 6 hours. But great to see Djokovic and Nadal in action tonight from 7:40.
And just next door to Rod Laver Arena is the MCG hosting the Melbourne Stars and Brisbane Heat tonight, Trent.
It's amazing, Ray, that perhaps Cricket Australia thought that the first test at the Gabba wouldn't go into a fourth night, and they had a big bash game set to go at 7:15 this evening at the G, but you've got the Melbourne Stars $1.65 and the Brisbane Heat at $2.25. Just the favourites for the high bet. For the Stars, Marcus Stoinis at $4 there, while for the Heat, no surprise, Chris Lynn at the top of the market at $3. And even after what occurred yesterday with the early finish to the first test, we do have a market already up for the second test result between Australia and Sri Lanka. And Australia, as you would expect, dominant favourites at $1.20, the draw $9, and Sri Lanka $7. And the second test will begin Friday 10:30 at Manuka Oval in Canberra.
He was more like Ray Thomas than Ray Thomas then.
What's that?
Shooting for the Stars will be Hall of Fame trainer right next door to Rod Laver Arena is the MCG. A-League.
He's a hard man, Trent.
Yeah, aren't you glad that Bossy just will be after last week, just what you've been
What are you suggesting? When am I going on holidays again?
Well, the two matches in the A-League, I'll just mention the favourites here, fellas. From 6 o'clock, Adelaide United are $1.47 against Central Coast, and Perth $1.80 against Newcastle. And there have been some upsets in the fourth round of the FA Cup from 3 o'clock in the morning. Tottenham are $2.40. They're away to Crystal Palace, an all-EPL affair. And Chelsea are $1.20 at home to Sheffield Wednesday. And yes, in the NBL, a couple of games, the bigger of the two. Obviously, from a Sydney point of view, $2.50 this afternoon at Kudos Bank Arena, as Tanya mentioned in her sports update. The Sydney Kings are $1.60 and the Perth Wildcats at $2.35. Enjoy those courtside seats as well, Ray. And to check out all those markets and plenty more, you can head to tab.com.au.
They're copping it today.
Thank you, Trent.
We pay our way.
Very good.
Oh,
hang on. There's a blow-up from Tanya. Apparently you've outlaid some cold, hard cash.
We do.
What's wrong?
The King's Kind gave us tickets once, but we don't like asking again, so we pay our way.
You don't like asking again?
No.
That's the strangest thing I've ever heard, yeah. And Andrew Gaze, if you're unsure of who that number is that's been bombarding you, it's Ray Thomas. 1353, the open
one. What are you doing to me?
Well, let's go to Dougie. He might like to send us off on a winner here. G'day, Doug.
G'day. Jimmy, g'day, Ray. How are you?
How are you, Doug?
Not bad, thanks, Ray. I just want to talk about Tom Greenberg. Could he be? Is he going to get more tougher of the players, I've been told.
That's what he's been saying. Noted with interest, press conference he did, how disappointed he was. He's threatened to come down hard on the players. You've got to be careful though with justification around the sentences you give based on the charges that are that the players are facing.
Right. As long as they're not a little bit personal with the players, they've got to get their own privacy sometimes too, and it's got to be the right thing at the right time, isn't it?
Yes. I agree. Thanks for the call, Doug. Yeah. Not sure.
One's from Marcus. I see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Boys, great ties. The centenary test when Rick McCosker broke his jaw and came out to bat again, jaw strapped up. So not talking about the result, but the great tie of Rick McCosker.
Well, that goes back to Manly Man Al, who said, morning, boys, best ties. Ray's best tie is his members' tie at Royal Randwick. For me, it was I tied the knot. And for Zorba, it's any tie in King Street, Newtown. Good on you, Manly Man Al. We do appreciate that. Sparty and Lenny has sent us out a tweet too. This is a PSA, you understand, it's a public service announcement.
Yes.
Just a tip for any young men or woman who love Test cricket. If you take a new love interest to watch day one of a Test match and they ask you at lunch, who's winning? That relationship probably won't work out. Thank you.
Well, he's done it from experience. That's happened in his life. But anyway.
I must admit, there was something on the other day and Austin and I were talking about it. And it said, oh, it's a full toss and look, that's got to be at LBW. And Tracy said, that's a completely different language you guys are speaking, yeah?
He still hasn't come to grips with it after all these years.
Not come to grips with it. Coming up on Racing HQ, Full Wong.